Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we started this podcast because we knew just a few, actually more than a few, women in our own lives who are making waves in the world that not many people knew about other than kind of our sphere of influence. And we knew if we had so many women that we were inspired by, you all had so many women as well. And the longer we do this, the more we realize that the world is full of women doing crazy, big, and bold things in addition to being great moms. So on this podcast, we interview women and find out what pokes their mama bear and why they use their mama bear to create dynamic and beautiful change in the world. So that's what we do on Mondays. Today, we interview one such mama bear, Melanie Dale.
That's right. It's a fantastic interview. She is the author of It's Not Fair, Learning to Love the Life You Didn't Choose. And we had a great time talking to Melanie, and we learned a lot from her as she just talked to us about dealing with the downs of life and how to survive those really low moments with acceptance and faith and good friends and probably most notably, a little bit of laughter.
Yeah, we did. We laughed a lot on the podcast, and also you and I did when we were reading the book as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyone who's been a longtime listener of the Mama Bear Dares podcast knows that we kind of talk about pressing into the painful moments a lot around here, right? So, I mean, as uplifting and upbeat as we try to be, you and I, this is a theme that kind of emerges with almost every interview we do. You know, I'm sure you're like me. This is something that I keep learning and then relearning and then relearning. This idea that Melanie talks about, like the need to recognize and live through the painful moments in life, just really embracing that pain and embracing the struggle of it in order to come out on the other side and feel whole again. I mean, we're all hurting in some ways at any given moment, right? And you can call it broken, you can call it whatever you want, but we struggle. We struggle. So many of our guests hit on this idea that you cannot sweep the struggle under the rug, but you have to face it head on, whatever you need to do, and then just kind of allow it to shape your character and become stronger because of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of the Khalil Gibran quote in The Prophet. He writes an essay on joy and sorrow and says, the deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. So he talks about how joy and sorrow really are inseparable.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So we ask Melanie a big question about her particular coping mechanisms, and her response is funny, but it's really, really vulnerable. And Tessie, I feel like we need to be honest here ourselves. We can't ask our guests questions that we're not willing to answer ourselves.
Are you sure we can't? This is our jam, man.
Well, I know we work really hard on treating ourselves well and implementing self-care. And for me, I've been especially attuned to that since we started this podcast, because we're always talking to our guests about, you know, what do you do for your other self? You know, we know you're great at the mother self, but how do you take care of your other self? Sometimes that's really hard, but it's so important. And honestly, sometimes things are just bigger than my morning meditation, or, you know, those feelings of anxiety and sadness start to creep in. And my first impulse is to avoid. So we asked Melanie this question, and we should answer it ourselves. So when these feelings kind of creep into your life, what do you do to, and we're not saying this is healthy, but distract yourself from the pain?
Oh man, I am just the worst at diving into like just total garbage TV. And I'm not talking about like the really good you know, stuff that's like a comment on our society and all of the, no, I'm talking about
just total, garbage,
just garbage,
filth and filth
for movies that did not have an actual public release, but were left to like the Netflix rounds, you know, I mean, just total garbage. That's the only, that's my distraction point. What's yours?
That actually is so much more fun than mine. Probably. I feel like I just make myself really busy. Like I just do everything I can to avoid thinking at all, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just jumping into busy work and busy projects. And I mean, I don't know if I'm avoiding right now, but I am refinishing an old dresser in my garage.
Leslie Ann! Oh my gosh. Yes, you are. We need to talk about this. How long do we have for this intro? Let's phone your therapist.
It's true. Jake gets very worried when the power tools come out. He's just like, wait a second. You're burying something. I know you are.
Oh my gosh. I think we can also both admit, and what we have a mini coming up on this actually, but like the wine and coffee, probably both guilty of those to excess when we're trying to hide something too. Can you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the wine. I mean, when you're feeling sad and it's later in the day, you're sort of just like, oh, you know, I know what I need. I need a glass of wine or two, you know? So that definitely is another, really, it's a way of distracting. It's a way of feeling better if you let it be that. I mean, it can also just be really fun and a way to relax with your friends or your husband or whatever. But it can also be dangerous if you don't kind of understand why you're doing it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will get into that in a future podcast. No worries there. But another more productive coping mechanism that Melanie stresses and that you and I both enjoy is laughter. Like you'll hear in the interview that Melanie is quick to laugh, which we appreciate so very much. She's fun. She's funny. And it's reflected in her writing as well as in the interview. Mm-hmm. She says in the interview that her mom has a motto that many of us have heard before, right? You've got to laugh to keep from crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit to doing both simultaneously constantly.
It's true.
But, you know, Melanie talks about this, how she kind of cultivates laughter. She uses it as a coping mechanism. And it's evident throughout her whole life, really. And I love this. I really love that.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of you listening to us introduce this book about kind of making the most of the hard stuff, you might be thinking, you know, I'm not in the valley right now. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
I'm on a peak. Like life is good. It's actually peaceful and pretty beautiful right now. So even if you don't necessarily relate with a woman who's writing about the life that she didn't necessarily choose, I still think, and I know you would agree, Tessie, that this interview is still for you.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite parts of the interview is when Melanie talks about how to be a good friend to a friend who is struggling. So even if you're not struggling in this moment, you might know someone who is. And Melanie talks about these people that she calls grace bearers. And she gives some specific hints as to how we can help those around us who are struggling. And I know our listeners, Mama Bears, I know you are compassionate people and you like to help and you like to lift others up. And I think that she gives some really smart ways as to how to help those around you who are in the midst of something hard. You know, that can be really tricky. And she, in this book and in the interview, helps us navigate just sort of the do's and don'ts in being a really gracious, honest, helpful friend.
I know. I struggle with this a little bit because I do think it's unique to the receiver, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because you're one of my people, Leslie, and I'm putting you on the spot here because you can't go anywhere. I want to know, what is one of your favorite ways that grace bearers can show up? Like, how do I do better for you?
Yeah, I love this question, and I want to encourage our listeners to be proactive and ask their friends the same thing. You know, just to kind of be like, okay, I want to know proactively when you're struggling, what do you need? And I mean, the first thing that jumps into my mind, Tessie, is our friend Beth. She is so good at this. She knows that I don't necessarily need a long conversation on the phone. I might like to know that you called, but I don't actually want to talk.
No.
So like a voicemail would be fine, a text message for sure. But she actually, she shows up and she doesn't even ring the doorbell. She just sets baked goods. She's done this. I've known her for 8 years now, and she's done this multiple times. She'll just leave like a plate of cookies on the table on my porch with like a little note or something.
Yes.
And it is just food for the soul. I mean, it makes me feel noticed. It makes me feel loved. And I just appreciate it so much. I think that is, she comes bearing grace, like Melanie talks about.
She's amazing, this Beth. She was actually on the podcast. We'll link to her episode, because I think our listeners, if you haven't listened to her episode, you'll catch on to that immediately. Mm-hmm. She, I agree with you. She might be the very best person I know at doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Oh yeah. What about you, Tessie? What can I do for you? What can the people who are in your circle of kind of love and grace, how do we, you know, treat you better when you're going through the valleys?
Well, I'm a lot like you. I mean, I don't want anyone to call me ever. So don't do that. I love texts. You know, I love just like, oh my gosh, I just heard, this is terrible. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm thinking of you. Like, great. Then I can cry without having to talk and just be in my own. I kind of have to work through it myself. Right. And so I love when either I get a text, or I had terrible, terrible pneumonia in November, and my group of adoptive mama friends, they sent a woman to clean my house while I was laid up. You know,
and I
didn't ask them for it. Aww. I didn't do any of that. They just knew that I couldn't take care of my family the way I normally like to. And so they did it. So it's those little things, just like, hey, what could she really use? And then I'll give her that. You know, Melanie mentions a full frontal hug, and I appreciate arms extended, full frontal hug. So I know that you're not going in for a handshake. I know you're not just like be open, chest to chest. Let's do it. I love that too.
That's so great. And you know, some mamas might need an hour of conversation.
Yes.
You know, I think everyone has their own thing. So let's just put it out there. Tell your friends, you know, this is what I need. Listen to what they need. And I really think this is a great point in Melanie's book. And I love that, you know, she shared a little bit on the podcast as well. So finally, listen to the end of the interview with Melanie, because she drops some knowledge that she gleans from a friend. And I'm going to I have to give a sneak peek of what this is, because I loved it so much. She says that her friend said, use the yummy lotion in the bottom of the drawer, right? Use the yummy lotion that you've been saving and saving. It's this special thing. But use it now, you know, when you're feeling low, like let yourself experience pleasure. And this so resonates for me. I am this person. I constantly fight myself on this, because I realize the power of being good to yourself and nurturing yourself and recognizing that today, no matter what, is a day for celebration. Mm-hmm. And yet you have to pry gift cards out of my hands.
You
to make
do.
Me
it's
spend them.
Crazy. It's crazy.
And it's the same for like special bottles of perfume or special bottles of wine or like special note cards. I want to like save them for the perfect note to write. And instead of just using them to celebrate the present, I'm like a hoarder of yummy things.
It is so true. Mama Bears, you want to know a secret about Leslie?
Oh, no.
Every year for our water party, we develop baskets. And one of the first years of the baskets, we were looking for gift cards to put in the baskets. And I am not exaggerating when I tell you that like 15 gift cards were from Leslie's own purse.
I know.
She had not
I am not
used.
Proud of this. There was like three massages.
Yes, like a yoga.
I know, like a certificate for like 10 hot yoga sessions.
That I like can't even with
people
you.
Had given me as gifts. It's a problem. I don't know. I don't know why I do it. I just am always like, oh, there'll be a rainy day. But then the rainy day comes and I still don't spend them. So I need to work on this. I'm going to tell you right now that I have a gift card to a bookstore given to me by my friend Kim like 6 months ago. And I haven't spent it. I also just brought back a bottle of Prosecco from Italy. Mm. And so you have to keep me honest. I need okay. to enjoy these things.
Yeah. Well, that one's safe for me.
Safe okay. for when I
And it's so funny because I'm the exact opposite. I literally, a kid who I coached on soccer, their parents gave me a Big B, which is a Michigan coffee here, gift card. And our last game ended at like 5:30, 6:30 at night. And I went right and got me a decaf coffee. I was like, better no. use this. So, I mean, when I write, I burn our candles. I mean, I used our good china from our wedding day on Saturday when we had like 30 people over and 20 of them were children. I mean, I just don't care.
It's good. This is a good thing. And I admire you for that a lot. I am so down with the concept.
All right. So we'll check in a little bit about how you're doing.
Okay.
Or maybe we can post on our social media, like an image of you handing over the gift card to the bookstore. Like, tell us which book you picked out.
Okay. All right. Okay. I will accept that challenge.
Okay. You guys, this interview with Melanie is so great. She is wonderful. Her book was really good. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of you. And Leslie and I just honestly had a really good time talking to her.
All right. So now that we know I'm going to soon pop open that bottle of Prosecco for no other reason but to celebrate the day, and that's good enough, let's get into our interview with Melanie.
Melanie Dale is a writer, blogger, podcaster, speaker, and author. She's a wife and a mama to three babes. On her popular blog, unexpected.org, she writes about unfunny things like infertility and adoption with wisdom and plenty of humor. She does the same with her podcast, Lighten Up with Melanie Dale. And on August 16th, her second book, It's Not Fair, Learning to Love the Life You Didn't Choose, hits the shelves. We read it, we related to it, and now we are so excited to welcome Melanie Dale onto the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Welcome, Melanie.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we like to start our podcast with a fairly easy question. Just tell us about where you grew up and specifically, what about your childhood maybe helped bring you to where you are now?
Sure. I was born in Kentucky. And then when I was six, we moved to Northeastern Ohio, right outside of Cleveland. And I pretty much spent most of my childhood hiding somewhere with a book, like in the closet or in the bathroom. My parents were like, we think she might have a bit of a problem. She's always in the bathroom. But I was just basically always reading. I love reading. And I just went through stacks and stacks of books, everything from the classics to Babysitter's Club, just anything I could get my hands on. So I always hear that phrase, like writers are readers. And that is definitely true for me. I spent my childhood hiding with a book.
I too love the Babysitter's Club, and I have not thought about that for such a long time. But like the second you said that, I remember like Claudia. I think I was a Claudia. Like who were you? I can't remember the other characters, but those were
so everybody cool. wanted to be Claudia. No, I love Claudia, like with her awesome fashion sense. But then part of me wanted to be Christy because she seemed to be kind of like the boss. You know,
you're right.
I was Christy. I identified with Christy. I'm like, that's me. Same.
Here's what's funny though. Like when I finally was old enough to babysit, I hated it. I hated babysitting. I was just gonna read about it. Apparently.
That is really funny.
I agree with you. Most of the writers I know, all of the writers I know, are avid readers too. So you're a writer, as we talked about. You've now authored, this is your second book coming out. And then you also write a blog on your website. We'll link to all of this in the show notes, Mama Bears. Don't worry, you can hit them and find her. We'll get into your newest book in a little bit, but tell us how you got started writing. I know you were reading early on, but when did you start writing? Was it always a passion of yours?
Pretty much. I would like journal snarkily and write poetry. So, yes. You know, like on a car trip with my family, I'd be in the back being like, this is so lame. I'm going to write moody poetry about how I'm stuck in the car with my family. Yeah. So I was pretty much always writing something. And now my parents, they saved a bunch of it and they've given it to me now. And it's
hilarious
and mortifying, you know, to read. You wrote for like 14. So I've always written. And then I was a theater major in college. But even as a theater major, I really got into writing scripts and plays. I love dialogue and like making characters talk to each other. And then in high school, I told my English teacher, I remember I told her I wanted to be a writer, but I knew that it was impossible because everybody wants to be a writer. You know, it's like when people say they want to be an actor, you're like, oh, sure. That's great, sweetie. And she said to me, well, somebody has to make it. So why not you? And so that it was just kind of been rattling around in my brain like, wow, somebody has to be a writer. So why not me?
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. So what's your process like? I know that's such a question that you hear of the process of your writing, but do you like you did as a kid, do you shut yourself in a room and, you know, just stay there for a couple of days and write, or do you get up early? When do you get this done?
So I'm a mom. So, my writing process looks different depending upon my kids' schedules. It's all about them, right? So when they were little, this is going to sound crazy, but I love coffee. And so I actually installed a coffee maker in my closet in my bedroom.
Oh my gosh.
Like I had an electrician come in and put a plug in and everything.
Oh my
and so, because you know, when your kids are little, like if they even hear your foot in the hallway, they wake up and they're like, yeah. Like, I would get up at like 3 or 4 in the morning, forget it. Like they would be like, mommy. And so I put a coffee maker in the closet and I would roll out of bed like in the wee hours and make coffee right there in the closet and just start writing. And that way I'm still technically in my bedroom. They don't know I'm awake and I could get a bunch of work done before I had to start the day. So that was when they were little. Now my kids are older. They're 11, 9, and 6. And so they go to school. I put them on the bus and then I try to write about 1,000 words a day, whether it's total crap or semi-decent. I just 1,000 words a day, butt in chair, just write. Now it's the summer right now and my kids are here. And so it's a little bit harder, but, they watch TV and play video games and I'm not ashamed.
Yeah, absolutely. Leslie and I were just talking about that, how hard that is. Well, first I got a comment on the coffee maker.
Let that go.
Because that sounds like you might be my most favorite person in the world. This is so, but I do have to ask, like, like your husband, talk to me. Was he totally okay with coffee being made in the closet early?
Well, it's probably just smell like coffee. You know, I can't even. No, my husband is a graphic designer. And so and web developer, we both work at home and we both are like on our computers all day. And so he is just as crazy as I am, maybe more so.
Okay.
So he gets it. He gets it. I really love that. I love the image of the coffee pot in the closet. Like I just need to stay here a little bit longer. Cause I think if we were to really analyze that too, like you are committed to your craft.
Yes. Yes.
I love it.
And also we should deal with my coffee addiction.
Well, you're amongst friends with that. Yes, we can't help you with that. Sorry. Yeah, we can only join you.
When other moms tell me that they don't drink coffee, like I have so many emotions. First of all, I'm just like so impressed and respect that so much that they're able to parent without caffeine. And then I'm also like, how? I don't understand.
So Melanie, I think we've kind of joked about this before, but I feel like Melanie would understand how I've told you before, like I go to bed excited for my morning coffee. Yes. Like it's, yes.
Absolutely.
It is. It's a thing. So I do. I mean, all jokes aside, I hope people hear that. Like when your teacher said, why can't it be you? You didn't just then like write when you had a few moments here and there. You were committed to making it happen. And I think that's really a good takeaway. Like if you guys want to be a writer, if you want to be an artist, whatever you want to do, get an electrician in there, set up the coffee pot, get down to business before all the excuses happen, right? Before the day and your family kind of wakes up. I love that. So obviously when you were younger, writing was kind of a hobby, but then at some point in our lives, right, it makes this transition into a vocation or something that you're committed to doing for almost a larger purpose. So when you were getting paid for it, either in your book or on your blog or whatever, how did that change your writing? How did you kind of, you know, navigate what you wrote and how you wrote when you could picture a really large audience?
I think the big turning point came for me, not when I started getting paid for it. I started blogging in 2009, and I really didn't make money from writing until I signed my first book deal. And so for me, the real change of this is what I want to do for my life, was when I started listening to what my readers needed rather than just what I felt like writing. Mm-hmm. So I think when I started blogging, it was really just a place where I could kind of process what I was learning and our family, and it was just a place for me to write whatever I wanted to. And then over the course of a few years, as people started to respond and I started noticing certain posts really seemed to resonate with other moms, and then other posts didn't, I started to go, oh, so what do other people need? And how can I provide what people need and listen and help, try to help other people? And how can my writing be for others and not just for myself? And so that to me was a big turning point. Like I really started caring a lot about my readers, and I think relationships are the most important thing to me. So just starting to develop a community of readers on my blog and just really caring about them so much, starting to recognize their names when they popped up in comments and that for me really, before I ever got paid for anything, that felt like a vocation to me. Like when I started caring about the people on the other side of the screen. And then obviously, I mean, sitting at a restaurant with my agent and my editor and my marketing director and my PR director and signing a book deal with Zondervan was like a major life moment for me, for sure.
Really cool. Yeah, it's incredible. And I hope we can kind of touch on at least the idea of your first book as well, because I think our listeners would really enjoy that. But so you said that, you know, you were getting this response from your readers early on. What were some of those early posts that really resonated? I'm just curious about like what topics were people responding to?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an adoptive mom. And so I wrote a lot about adoption. And I think a lot of the other mothers who were going through that process or had adopted started to write back to me. And so it was really neat to get to develop community with other people who maybe were in a little bit of a similar place. And then I also, I did a series on my blog where I really spoke openly about my dealing with infertility and started to meet other people online who were also dealing with infertility and just some of the commonalities, some of the common pain that we had shared and everything. That was also a big deal for me. Mm. Those two things. And then really the turning point as far as just being able to write to a wider audience was when I wrote a post. It was actually, my first book was based on this post. I called it Dating for Moms. And it was just a funny post where I kind of talked about the bases of what I called momlationships, where, you know, we have our own way of dating. It's not the same as dating, you know, romantically, but we meet other moms and go around these bases. And so my first book was about that. And so Dating for Moms, it became the book Women Are Scary, the totally awkward adventure of finding mom friends. And the whole thing was based on a dating analogy. And that was really fun. And that's when I really started having, I think, so much fun writing for women and then for moms in particular.
Oh my gosh. I know. I can relate to that so much. And I don't think there's anyone more awkward in those situations than I am, because I don't know how to relate on like a surface level. So I just am like, oh, cried myself to sleep last night. You know what I'm saying, guys? And it's just repulsive to people who don't understand that. So your first book, you mentioned it there. We'll link to it. You guys got to check that out too, because we have all been there. And oh my gosh, what a struggle. It's terrible.
It's so hard because, you know, especially as a mom, you get thrown into these situations where it's not like you chose to end up talking with a room full of other women you don't know, but you signed your kid up for dance class or soccer, right. And all of a sudden you're there and you're like, okay, I have an hour. I guess I could make awkward small talk with these people and see what happens. And so it really can feel like dating. And yes. And then sometimes you totally hit a home run and find like your best friend ever. And it's beautiful. And so, yeah. And I love relationships so much. And so it was really important for me to talk about the women in my life who've meant so much to me and how I've cultivated those relationships.
Yeah. Because it takes work. I mean, I think just that putting yourself out there as you might, you know, as you're just in seeking any sorts of relationships, but then just trying to like cultivate those as a busy mom who's taking care of little kids. I think that is something I think about all the time. We hear about all the time, like we are made for community, but it can be so hard to find that community and then find the time to put the work into those communities.
Right. Right. Yeah. Intentional.
Yeah, you do, especially as a mom. And, you know, we've talked before on the podcast with other guests, when your kids are little, it is almost easier. You all go to a friend's house, you drink a lot of coffee, let the kids like destroy a house, and then you switch to a next house, you know, another house the next week, so that house that you just move the destroying behavior. Right. But it's harder when they're older, you know, because they're just going in different places and things like that. So I've certainly found that you just have to be so crazy intentional as the years go on too.
Yes, you do. It's so true. My friendships have started to change as we've moved into the elementary school years. And now I have one going into middle school. And it is amazing how those times with other women don't just happen anymore. I have to really make them happen. People keep saying, oh, I need you to write Women Are Scary for like the teen years. I'm like, give me just a few more years to write that. I'm not there yet. I'm getting there.
Well, let me know when you do. I have some funny anecdotes about me at baseball games. Just in the last 2 days, I have material for 3 months. So, perfect. So that was your first book. Your newest book that's coming out August 16th, It's Not Fair, Learning to Love the Life You Didn't Choose, is all about the ways in which your life has turned out differently than you had planned. So, you know, we get sent books all the time, as I'm sure you do. And before we agree to speak to the authors, we always make sure the book will relate to a good portion of our Mama Bear audience. And I think this idea, this, you know, of life being so different than you had planned is such a universal feeling. So what made you want to write a book about this?
So my first book, I was, I really wanted to help people find friends. And in my second book now, It's Not Fair, I really want to be your friend when you're going through something hard. I have been through many things in my life, and I needed a safe place where we could talk about our feelings of disappointment or fear or anger about where God is and everything. And so I wanted to create that safe place within a book where someone could go when they're really struggling with something. Because so often we think our life is going to go one direction, and then we end up in a totally different place. And we experience the death of a dream. And so I wanted to have just an honest conversation about that. I want to talk about my favorite coping mechanisms for the pain and disappointment. I want to laugh together in the midst of the hard stuff. So I really just wanted to write a book that people would feel comfortable giving to their friends who might be going through something hard. But then also if you just need someone who gets it, that I kind of want to just be there for you. I feel like a lot of times we want to, you know, like put a bow on everything or just like slap a Bible verse on something to try to make someone feel better. But sometimes when you're going through real pain, that's just not what you need. You need someone who can say, me too, and just sit next to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does feel like your whole book is just a way of saying, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. If you've dealt with it too, then just pull up a chair. You know, let's go sit in my closet and have a cup of coffee, or let's just walk through it together. And I think essentially that's what we hope this podcast is for people as well, of just like, you know, me too. Oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one. One of the things that you write about in both your book and your blog is infertility. And we've had guests come on the show and talk about this before. And every time, you know, we hear comments and we get emails from people saying, oh my gosh, you know, it feels so good just to know that someone else has been through that and that they're still alive and they're on the other side. And in your case, in particular, like, you're still laughing, like you're smiling and you're telling jokes. So what was just that sort of process of going through the hard stuff like for you? And I guess if you could give our listeners who might have sisters or friends who are experiencing specifically infertility some advice about how we can walk alongside with them.
Okay. So to friends of people going through infertility, I dealt with infertility for 5 years, and then we were able to have our first child through in vitro. And then we experienced secondary infertility on the other side of that. And so what I would describe it as, and, you know, I'm not speaking for all infertile people out there. Obviously we're all different, right? There's nuance, but for me, I would say it's like experiencing a loss every single month. So every single month, your friend is grieving. And some months are harder than others. Some months she's taking a break or she's busy with work and she's okay. But other months, she really thought this was the time, and she's invested in a treatment. She's put her body through the ringer, and then she's utterly devastated. So I would say be gentle with your friend and give her a pass on having to go to a baby shower.
Yeah.
Maybe, and this was true for me, maybe she needs to skip church. Maybe she needs to just skip it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you could check on her later. I would say, you know, don't try to fix it, but just bring her a latte or something stronger. please don't give her a God's timing lecture. Just don't talk about God's timing is perfect. Doesn't feel perfect. If she's finding comfort in that, then she can find comfort in that, but don't bring it up if you're her friend. God's timing, honestly, it can just start to chafe when you're dealing with infertility. And so I would say just love her, make her feel valuable, make her feel fully female. Sometimes we all fall for that lie that we have to have a child to feel like we've experienced all of womanhood. Mm-hmm. But we are complete. You are complete and whole and beautiful now, with or without having a baby in your belly. So
yes,
those are some of the things that
yes,
I needed. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah.
And then I would say too, like, so a big part of my story, and I talk about it a lot in the book, is my walk through infertility and all of that. And it's interesting because when I was writing this book, originally I thought, oh, I've learned to love the life I didn't choose, and I'm going to write a book and show you how to do it. And you just check a box once you've loved the life. And in the middle of writing my book, my life sort of fell apart again. And I realized this isn't something that you just like finish and move on, but that like pain and heartache it can sometimes take a lifetime, and we continue to bump up against things where we experience broken expectations. And so, for me, after all of the infertility and everything, and then the secondary infertility, and then we went through a couple of adoptions and the waiting and the loss and, heartache of just getting through all of that. Then on the other side of it, I was kind of like, okay, I have my 3 children. We are moving on. Life is going to get fun. And then over the course of writing this book, we hit a bunch of diagnoses for our children, things that aren't just going to get fixed. So we're now looking at words like autism spectrum. We're looking at ADHD, trauma, mental illness. And so all of a sudden I'm yet again bumping up against, okay, you know what? My expectations are different than what reality is. And so I've had several friends in the midst of us going through just some hard times over the last half a year or so with this, say things like, oh, you can fix it. You know, when it comes to like the autism diagnosis, like, oh, you can fix it is their first reaction. And I know that they mean well, but they're like trying to load me up with information on how to fix the problem. But for me, the friends that really have meant so much to me are the ones who just hug me and then say things like, I love you. You're a great mom. I love your awesome kid. Like, that's it. That's all you need to say.
And that's so simple. You know, I mean, really, that's a really simple response, but it's hard. It's hard to remember that and to think that that's enough when someone you love is suffering. So I love that you know, kind of put that out there in all of these various ways that, you know, just sit with the people who are suffering. Like, take it from me. I know, you know, I've been there. And I think then, you know, we all can kind of look at your story and be like, yeah, I've had hard times too. And the things that made me feel better were just people acknowledging that, like, life was kind of hard right now, you know, rather than here's the answer to all of your problems. So it's, I love how you are so open about sharing that and how it really is something that, like, I think, regardless of what your life looks like on the outside, like, we all have those desperate moments where we're feeling like, man, this is not what I signed up for. This is not how I thought things were going to be. And just acknowledging that and being okay, I guess.
Yeah. I think that when you experience the death of a dream or expectations that are different than what you thought, like, you have to sit with that a minute. Like, I think so often we want to just be like, oh, it's fine. Mm-hmm. This is better. We're going to move on. And it might be awesome and it might be fine, but it's okay to grieve first and to just sit with the brokenness and sit with the unfulfilled expectations and go, okay, things are different than what I thought they would be. We're in a different place than we thought we were. And it's okay to just grieve that first thing that we thought it was going to be before we move on to, okay, it's going to be okay. It doesn't have to be okay right away. You can sit there for a minute first.
Because it's, you got to sit through that pain. And of course you can look forward and trust, you know, that something's going to change, hopefully for the better. But until you really sit with it, I don't even know if you can fully appreciate what comes next, kind of.
Totally. After the infertility and realizing I was never going to be able to have all of the biological children that I just always thought that I was going to be able to have, I had to check myself into some therapy and like work through all of that with a counselor. And doing all of that work and like pressing into that pain is what got me to a healthy place to then get really excited about adoption. So that adoption wasn't this fallback thing of like, well, I can't have babies, so I guess I'll adopt. No, it was like, because I took the time to kind of sit in the pain and process that and work through that, then I came out of on the other side healthy and really excited, and adoption became plan A for our family building.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that you talk about that in your book about adoption was one of the ways that your life turned out differently than you expected. Leslie and I have actually adopted from Ethiopia like you, and you've also adopted from Latvia as well. So, you know, I think for sure you have to kind of, our friends who have struggled with infertility and then chosen to adopt as well was like, hey, it still ended up being plan A, but I did have to just grieve a little bit what the family I thought I was going to have, but then I embraced it wholeheartedly. And, you know, you speak in your book, the complexities of adoption, which I appreciate because there are so many. So talk about that process of like, okay, here we go. You know, we're going to adopt and this is a good thing. How did you get there?
Okay. My story of how I completely fell in love with adoption is probably kind of weird. I don't know. I keep hearing people tell me like, oh, we always wanted to adopt. And that is awesome. That is not what happened for me. For me, I got to a place where I was healed and whole and like, okay, I have one child and he's going to be an only child and that is okay. And I'm content and fine with that. And I really, we got to that place of healthiness. And then the only way I can describe what happened next was like, I went to bed one night feeling that way. And I woke up the next day with this crazy passion for adoption. Apparently all these people in our lives had been praying for us that we would adopt. And so like we were like being cosmically ganged up on by our friends and family without our knowledge. And it came to fruition one day. It was a video at church about, it wasn't even adoption related, but it was about some kids in Africa. And so I think they were Kenyan children. And so for whatever reason, seeing that video in church made me kind of, my brain started to think. And so I went home and I was lying on the bed and just had a conversation with God. And it was seriously, it was like the Grinch, like his heart expanded 3 times. In this one conversation with God, I went from being like, oh no, I'm good. I feel good, to like, hey, I think we should adopt. I got to that place really fast, and probably things have been going on in the back of my mind and heart for a long time that I just wasn't aware of. But that afternoon, I got so excited for adoption to where I was like getting online, doing all the research, like, where do I sign up? What do I do? But I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to my husband, and he's like the one who's going to tell me, yeah, that's great, sweetie, but I'm not there. That's not happening. Because we'd never talked about it since all of this, since I was like, this is not happening. So I bring it up to him on the way to dinner, and he was like, yeah, I've been thinking about that too. And so unbeknownst to me, he's a web developer and graphic designer, and he had been working on these websites for orphan care related initiatives. And so he had just been like, his whole mind had been filled with photos of children in need of families for like weeks working on these websites. And I had no idea. And so when I brought this up to him, he was like, I'm there. Yeah. And we started the adoption process that week.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. And I have to back up. I love the idea of being cosmically ganged up on. That's such an amazing phrase. Like, I'm praying for my children, my husband and I are actually cosmically ganging up on them. But no, I love that story. And I love really the miracle of that, you know, and just like the way that life can take these turns, and how, you know, God might have, you think God maybe has one right path for you, but it turns out like God has all of these beautiful paths for you, and they're going to lead to love. I also like that throughout the book, you share stories of other women experiencing the life that they didn't choose. So your narrative kind of comes from this infertility and adoption, but you also tackle cancer and death. And each story offers that glimmer of hope, or that me too factor that we've been talking about. So what made you decide to kind of broaden the spectrum of the narrative of each individual person, and how you could possibly weigh in and find hope and also, again, humor in those stories?
I know that I can't be all things to all people. So my unfairnesses, my disappointments are limited to like my tiny little small perspective of my life. But I really wanted this book to be an all play. I want it to be for everybody, younger, older, kids, no kids, and even some men who are brave enough to read about my ovaries. They are also welcome.
Which you draw pictures of in the book as well. I feel like we need to note that.
Yeah, the book is illustrated. I did my own doodles.
I love it.
So there's a doodle of my evil ovaries going, wah, wah, wah. Okay. So I just wanted to get as many stories in there as I could. I did the same thing with Women Are Scary, my first book. I love women, and I love all of our stories and our the different things that we have in our lives. And I want us to learn from each other. And so I talk about infertility. I talk about having kids with some various challenges, but we have so many other stories out there. So I cover everything from cancer to affairs, to drugs, to growing up in a cult, to losing people, and just like everything in between is in there.
It's so true. And, you know, one of the broader pieces of your book is just this idea that really, I mean, it resonates so much with us, and we've covered it on the podcast before, but just, you've got to deal with your stuff, or you, it will just eat you up. And you talk about feelings that you've suppressed, like gangrene at one point, which I just loved. I thought that was a perfect explanation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found that our culture almost celebrates the numbing and the escaping mechanism so that we don't have to deal with those emotions, you know, things like alcohol or food or too much exercise or crappy TV, whatever it is. So maybe if you could just give us some examples. You talked a little bit about them, like having to sit through, you know, the loss that you experienced through infertility and through kind of the complexities of adoption. But how did you, like, give us an example maybe of just like when you tried to escape and then they caught up with you and the result was not as good?
Okay, awesome.
I was going to say, like, tell us your secrets. Come on.
Yeah. Share my crap with you. Yeah. So for me, when I was at my lowest with infertility, I was just basically a human lab rat dealing with chronic pain. And I didn't even really understand how low I was. You know, I think I was really struggling. I look back now and realize I was so depressed. I was in full blown major depression and didn't even really understand how bad it was. I would spend every day lying on the couch, just watching whatever was on TV. Like, I just wanted to stay as numb as possible. So, I mean, this is before Netflix, when you could like binge on fun shows. I just had the TV on and would just like scroll through. So I was watching things like Clifford the Big Red Dog. Like every episode, it was bad. Every episode of Full House ever, which just made it worse. I'm like, I want a Full House.
Oh, God.
Seventh Heaven, and like the more I watch that show, is like the more I need more kids and that I can't have. And I just watched the TV was on all day. I would just scroll through whatever was on and stayed numb. And really more and more shut out the outside world. I kept the lights low. I kept all the blinds shut. When people would ring the doorbell, I would hide. I just wanted to just shut out the world. And I was in chronic pain. I have really bad pain in my right ovary. And so at the time, this was kind of a new thing and we were trying to figure out what to do about it. So I was in and out of the hospital a lot. And then with all the fertility treatments and everything, I'd collected this huge collection of pain medication in the medicine cabinet. And I started while lying there watching TV all day, every day, I was starting to contemplate just taking all of them at once because your mind starts mm-hmm. to play tricks on you. So like, mm-hmm. I started to think like, oh, I just love my husband so much and I really want him to be able to have the kids he wants. And if I got out of the way, he could find himself a nice fertile wife and make mm-hmm. that happen. So like, obviously that is horrible and that is a lie, but because I was just lying there and I'd isolated myself and I was so depressed that it began to seem logical, you know, and nothing was fun anymore. I mean, we lived in DC, like, life, we were in our 20s in DC, like there's so much to do there. And I just didn't want to do anything. I had no energy. And so it was kind of in this, I talk about this in the book, but like it was in this kind of time in my life that these plans of suicide and how I could just like get out of the way so Alex could have kids really took root in my brain and it started to linger. And so that was really hard. And then I think God just, he just didn't leave me alone in that. I tried to be as alone as I possibly could. I mm-hmm. isolated myself as possible I could, but he would not go away, thankfully. And so one day, just in a fit of determination, I stood up and I ran across the room to the bathroom and I flushed all the pills at once and flushed them out. And I watched them swirl down the toilet and thought, there goes my backup plan. Mm-hmm. Like living is now my plan A. I'm staying alive. I'm committed to this no matter what happens. And I went back and laid down on the couch and it was like, okay, nothing really big happened. But at the same time, it was this moment in time that I remembered where I was like, I'm going to choose to live. And I'm going to choose to stay in this.
That's an enormous moment. And that, you know, it sounds simple mm-hmm. to make that decision, but in that time of your life, I mean, it's incredible the amount of pain that you must have been in. So thank you for being vulnerable with us and for sharing that. And I know you share, you know, a bit more in your book, but those are things that I think, again, like it's that me too, like I felt that way, or, you know, like hearing someone else that we think has it all together. Like, no, suffering is universal. You know, we have these moments of just complete desperation, and thank goodness, you know, you have your a strong faith that you are able to lean on, and, you know, other people find their ways to decide to go on and to find comfort. I do, just to kind of switch a little bit here. You're so funny, Melanie. Like, your writing is
fun today. And I know. Horrible.
Quick,
someone tell a joke.
I know. Quick, someone tell a joke. But yeah, so I'm just like, what I've, you know, read of your work, and then this story, but even the story, like, you tell in kind of a light, you know, like it's okay, like it happened, but life can be good. So I do want to ask you, just like, where were you just born sort of funny, or like, is it something that, like, your parents kind of instilled of just like, life, sure, life can be really hard, but there's so much levity to go around, you know? Talk to us just about that sort of attitude of laughter and joy. And because it does seem like you're someone who, though you've kind of been through the ringer in many ways, you cultivate that.
Yeah. My mom always said, you've got to laugh to keep from crying. So that's kind of been my mantra my whole life is, and crying's awesome too. Like, we do a lot of that as well, but, I really do just try to laugh through just about everything, probably to the point of it being inappropriate most of the time. And so, yeah, definitely within the book, I've got these really heavy moments, but then also I'm throwing in movie quotes and, really talking about how we can cultivate laughing as a coping mechanism, because I think that is so important and that it's okay to laugh. Yeah. My family, I think just growing up, we've pretty much laughed through everything. Mm-hmm. You have to give yourself permission to laugh, because it's your own story and it's your own crap that you're dealing with. And so you have to say, I'm allowed to laugh at this because it's mine. And I think it's one way that we can kind of take ownership of our lives and take back some of the control of whatever it is that's happening to us, that we get to laugh about these things because they're ours. We're not going to laugh at other people much, you know, I'm still working on that sometimes, but we're not going to laugh at other people, but we can laugh at ourselves and we can laugh at our circumstances because we get to do that.
Yeah. And sometimes it feels like this is the worst thing. So, like, the only natural conclusion is that this is a joke and I have to laugh about it. Otherwise, you know, and I think that's what you mean by, like, laugh to not cry, because you're just like, really? We're just going to keep going with this. I'm going to experience infertility and then all of these medical complications too. This is hilarious, you know, hilarious. And it's not, but I love that. Like, you get to decide, because it's my story. It's different if, like, a friend comes over and tries to make you laugh and you're just like, no, pass, you know, just move on. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, for you. And that's kind of one of the things I love too. Like, you give a lot of really great examples of what has helped you kind of get through some of the tough stuff. And I have to mention the fact that I knew I wanted to interview you as soon as I read that you believe wholeheartedly in the power of fuzzy blankets and pets, because along with my 5 children, my husband and me, I also have 2 dogs and 2 cats, because I'm a crazy person. And you talked about your dog for, like, I don't know, 4 paragraphs, and I cried the whole time, because there is something about, right, the 4-legged furry animal love. And so within that same chapter, you talked about finding grace bears, which I just love that, grace bears. And if they're busy, find a fuzzy blanket and a puppy, you know? So puppy and fuzzy blanket, I have those checked off. How do I find grace bears?
grace bears are like the safe people that we want to lean into during the hard times. And I definitely devoted a whole book, Wimner's Scary, to talking about how to find those friendships and those safe people, and cultivating those relationships. So I wrote down a few things about safe people that I think are characteristics of safe people that we can be on the lookout for. And so I'm just going to read them. Safe people pick up cues and they know when to back off and change the subject. Safe people can let you lead the conversation and talk about what you need to talk about, not what they need to know. Safe people give you grace when you're melting down and not handling things perfectly. They understand what's underlying and that it's not them or the cheeseburger you're eating or how your skinny jeans are cutting off your circulation. Safe people check on you when you drop off the face of the earth. And then safe people pray for you, but they don't use prayers to gossip about you.
Mm.
Safe people don't use your pain to manipulate you into doing what they want you to do. Safe people listen well. And safe people aren't perfect, but they're humble and apologize when they screw up. So those are some characteristics, I think, of grace bearers that I look for in my life, of people who get it and can be there for you when things are hard.
Yeah, I mean, we love a good slow clap on the Mama Bear Dares podcast. So the safe people definitely deserve a slow clap for sure. That was such a great description.
Good. Well, yeah, I love the safe people. They're good. We've all met the opposite of that, right? The people who say the wrong thing. And we've all been that too. Like that's, I mean, I've put my foot in my mouth so many times, like nobody is perfect. So yeah, we've all met the people that just, man, they say the thing that just like kick you when you're down. And so, yeah, I always want to look for people who aren't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Melanie, another thing I wanted to touch on is the idea of kind of ifing your life away. It happens all the time. So people, you know, we say, if I can get pregnant, then I can do this. Or if I finally get this job, then we'll do this. Ifing your life away, it's really saying, if this happens, then I'll finally be happy. And I think it's a really common thread that runs through our entire culture. I do it. I know.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So why do you think that this is? And tell us how, in your experience, shed some wisdom. How might we stop doing that in our lives?
Yeah, contentment is such a unicorn.
We
just want to get the thing because the thing will solve everything, but it doesn't always do that. So some things I do. So for me, my faith is kind of my thing. And so whatever that is for you. But like every morning I wake up and I thank God for another day. And so maybe that's, you know, whatever, wherever you are with all of that, but just being thankful and taking a moment to be thankful. And so I just kind of throw my hands wide open and say, thank you, God, for another day. I invite you into it. And so just taking a moment of thankfulness, for me is a big thing of just kind of being present and instead of ifing, just kind of being in the moment and starting that every morning. That's a discipline for me. I don't come by that naturally. That's not something I always want to do, but I just try to, like, when my alarm goes off, start there with thankfulness and gratitude. And I literally open my hands up because I just need like a physical reminder that I'm open and I'm receiving the day. And then at some point in the day, I like to count the wins. And I talk about this in the book, counting the idea of counting the wins, counting and catalog the things that are happening that are good in the day. Sometimes for me, it's so easy to be like, oh, if I could just have this, if I could just have that, the waiting is taking forever. This current situation is not good. But really when I look at the day, I can find plenty of small wins within it. And I let them just kind of go and I don't think about them. And so I try to really count them and pay attention to those things, whatever it is. So like with my kids, if things are hard and things aren't going well, just thinking about the things that are good right there. Well, what are the wins with this current situation? What are the wins with maybe some choices that my kids made that were awesome? And then the other thing I do is I speak the words, even if my heart might not be there yet. So I don't worry if my heart is there. I just kind of let it catch up when it's there, but just saying positive words and saying words of gratitude and saying positive words, even when I'm really grumbly inside. That's another big one for me. I think sharing a meal with a friend, I love just the relationships and surrounding myself with people like in my present now life, rather than thinking about what could be and what I want to be, just focusing on the people I have around me now and taking time to just savor a meal with one of them today, just exchanging the ifs for the nows, for what's going on now. I have a good friend of mine named Fabiola, who told me a couple years ago when I was in the middle of waiting for one of my girls to come home, I remember just being so and like the waiting and if I can just get this, if I could just get this. And she said to use the yummy lotion that I keep in the bottom of the drawer. And I thought that is so interesting. But we all have like that special candle or the yummy lotion that someone gave us as a gift. And it's like too nice to use today. Mm-hmm. And so we like keep it away. And so Fabiola's point was like, get it out and use it now. Like today is worth it. To just use that special thing you've been saving. So sometimes when we're wanting to if our life away and think about what could be, we just need to like go ahead and pull out the thing you were saving for a special occasion and just declare today is a special occasion.
I love that. I love that. The yummy lotion at the bottom of the drawer. Because I bet like everyone listening can be like, oh yeah, I've got one of those. You know, why am I waiting? When am I waiting to use it? I love that. I also really like everything you've described. You know, these are really healthy things to practice, but they don't just happen, right? Like you probably forget sometimes to open up your palms and utter a word of thanks when you wake up. Like it takes practice and it takes a discipline. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be this total paradigm shift of how you end up moving through this world when you can kind of practice those things. And again, give yourself grace, know that not every day are you going to be able to kind of smile your way through your anger or whatever, but just to continue to try to do those things and reap the benefits of just a much more peaceful sort of present way of being, as you describe.
Yeah. Throughout the book too, I have so many different emotions and that's what I love about emotions. You can really have any emotion you want back to back within 5 minutes and it's okay. It's your emotion. You get to have that. But throughout the book, I really try to have different chapters for different things you might be feeling too. So like there's an anger chapter there. Mm-hmm. So like the whole idea of, oh, let's be thankful in the moment. Like if that makes you want to shred a phone book with your hands, well then just go ahead and shred a phone book right now. Like, maybe that's where you are and that's okay. When we're going through something hard, we're going to have different emotions on different days. And so I could be a very grumbly, thankless person a lot of times. So for me, like waking up in the morning and just opening my palms is like just that physical reminder, even if my heart's not there, to just be like, all right, thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah. Apparently I survived the night. So I'm going to be That's thankful right. for that.
And you're so right. And it's one thing to experience that ourselves, you know, like, no, I'm angry right now and I have every right to my anger and I'm going to shred a phone book, or no, I'm going, you know, we have that, but watching a friend go through that is so hard. And I know if you're like me, I constantly try to fix my friends' problems. Like my husband will always be like, when I'm trying, you know, talking to him through something my friend's going through, he's like, do they really want you to fix this or they're just wanting you to listen? I'm like, dang it. I think they're just wanting me to listen, you know? And so I think one of my favorite parts of your book, because I need it so much, like I highlighted the entire thing. Like you have a chapter on 100 things you can do to help. And the ideas range from like, give a good, firm, full frontal, I'm so glad you were specific, hug. You know, or blast 80s music and have a dance party. I just loved this list. And essentially they said, just show up. I think, again, a lot of people like me try to heal our friends and we can't. We can't. And so this whole list was basically just you saying, this is how you can say to your friend, I see you, I hear you, I'm so, so sorry, but I'll be here. Like, this is me with you. I love that. And I just needed to thank you for that, because now anytime my friend comes to me with something, I'm just going to consult your list. So
I tried to really think of, like, you know, the love languages, how we receive mm-hmm. love in different ways. I tried to think of all of that and try to hit them all. So there's a bunch of stuff for everyone. And I just encourage you to like hand the book to a friend and be like, hey, circle what sounds good and just angrily cross off whatever you hate.
Yeah. It's so good. We're just on a pretty long extended family vacation. And we actually went through at the beginning and we're like, okay, we are going to be together 24/7 for 3 weeks. So when you get upset, what do you like? What do you need from us? You know, and it was interesting just to hear from the kids, you know, one of them just needed a bottle of water and one of them needed a hug, you know? So I think that's great to ask, like straight up, just ask your friends, like, hey, we're cultivating this relationship. We're in it for the long haul. Like, I'm going to be there for you. So when things get tough, how can I help? Like, let's talk about it now. So that is, it's a great list. I love it. Melanie, as we wrap up here, life can be heavy, right? Like, I think we all sort of can acknowledge that. And I love the laughter that you bring to it and the humor, despite all of the heaviness. But here on the podcast, we talk a lot about when life is heavy, we really need to be mindful about self-care. Mm-hmm. We know that you have so much going on and that you know, are raising children and you have, like so many of us, we have full, beautiful, challenging lives. So what are the things that you do, not just in service of your mother self, but your other self? So what do you do that's just for Melanie?
So I was booking therapy for everyone else, like all my kids. And we do therapy in our house, like other families do soccer. Like we do big fan of therapy. And so I'm booking that for everyone else. And when your kids therapist looks at you and says, mom, I think you're going to need to go see your therapist. You know, like, okay, huh, yeah, okay, right. So I have really committed to keeping regular therapy sessions on my calendar. And I'm realizing I feel stupid about that. I'm like, no, like I've got to go put out all the fires and I've got to handle my children and make sure that they're okay and getting what they need. But I need the therapy. And so I'm making sure, like, I just checked and made sure, like, I'm booked up for the rest of the month. Like, we're good. Mm-hmm. And then getting an occasional massage. And I've picked up, this sounds, everyone's into it. And I totally poo-pooed it, but I'm into coloring right now. I have a Doctor Who coloring book that is totally my jam. And my kids keep wanting me to share with them. So I keep like buying, I'm like, here, this one's mommy's. I'm not sharing this book.
Yep.
I'll buy you 15 of your own coloring books. Just leave me alone.
Right. Yep. Hands up this one.
And then getting away with my husband is a big one. And so that can just sometimes be, we lock ourselves out on the porch with a cup of coffee and while the kids are like pressed up against the glass going, when are you coming back in? or going in, you know, having an actual date away from the house. So, whatever we have time for. Yeah. So those are the things that good really get my brain and calm me down.
Those are so good. And I can totally relate to the like adult coloring book phenomenon. And I'm with you, like one of my kids, I have, of course, a Harry Potter coloring book, but, and one of my kids colored a page and I almost started crying because I was like, this is mommy's, this is my one good and beautiful thing in my life right now. That's just, you get away. So I can totally relate to that because it does, you feels like you have to just, you know, like, this is my precious, you guys got to figure your own stuff out, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, with the It's Not Fair book, I actually created, based on some of the doodles I did in the book, I made coloring pages to go with it.
That's brilliant.
It's so fun. I did like unicorns pooping rainbow poo emojis. Yes. And I did, there's a whole page of bombs with F's in the middle, which felt very cathartic.
Yep. Saw that.
I love that. I love it. Yes. And it is, it's a great book. It's fun that you do illustrate, you know, I mean, you're clearly a very creative person and whatever you're putting in your coffee in the morning is 100% working. So we're so thankful for that. So Melanie, it's been a great conversation. We want to let our listeners know that your new book, It's Not Fair, Learning to Love the Life You Didn't Choose, is available for pre-order on Amazon now, and it will hit bookstores on August 16th. We have a link to that book as well as Melanie's first book, Women Are Scary, The Totally Awkward Adventure of Finding Mom Friends, which could be a whole other podcast episode. So maybe we can do that again. We'd love to hear more of your thoughts on that topic. But Melanie, tell our listeners where else they can find you.
My blog is unexpected.org. So you can find me there. And you can find my podcast, my books, my blog, everything. If you go to unexpected.org, that'll do it.
Fantastic. Listeners, head there now. You have gotten a great glimpse of Melanie and her fabulousness and her really just wise perspective and dose of humor. So find her online and check out her book. And Melanie, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning.
Oh, you're totally welcome. This was so fun. Thanks, guys.
Mama bears, life throws us all kinds of curveballs. Not knowing what to expect can be beautiful. We can revel in excitement and the joy of unexpected gifts and unanticipated joys. But sometimes we're dealt things in life that we simply don't want and could never imagine signing up for. Sometimes we suffer in unplanned and devastating ways. These valleys are so hard, aren't they? They are the low points from which we ask the question, why? Why is this happening to me? How will I ever recover? How will I ever bounce back from this? Today, we dare you to lean into that pain and confusion. We dare you to feel it fully and to be honest with yourself and with others about the tools you need to emerge on the other side. Whether you face a life-altering diagnosis, a life-changing decision, a severing of a relationship, or the demise of a dream or a plan, we dare you to look it in the eye and believe us when we say that we hear you, we see you, and we are sorry you are suffering. Mama bears, we dare you to honor your friends and loved ones who are experiencing these low points of life in the best way you know how. If your impulse is to sweep in and try to solve all the problems, we dare you to stop and instead bear grace by showing up and simply listening. We dare you to be thoughtful and brave in your response to the suffering of others. And finally, mama bears, we dare you to laugh. Laugh at the absurdity of the situation. Laugh in the, can you believe this is even happening? Moments, and laugh at funny YouTube videos of clumsy kittens and bridal bloopers. Your mama bear is fierce inside of you. Be open to letting her feel the highs and the lows. Let her lead the way through them and be assured that she is big enough to experience the range of the human experience. You are strong. You are a mama bear.
That's right. Mama bears, rate us on social media. You'll find us on iTunes, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. Like us, review us. It really, truly helps us just to reach more women who might benefit from the wisdom of our guests or the topics that we tackle. You can always email us with suggestions or feedback at mamabeardares@gmail.com. And you can find the complete show notes and lots of other information on our website, which is mamabeardarespodcast.com. Thank you so much for coming along with us on this journey. We'll be back on Wednesday with a Mama Bear Mini.
Have a great week.
Have a great week.